Welcome back, everybody, to the Humble Coach Podcast. My name is Porrick. I am joined today by, I would say, pretty much one of the godfather of Irish CrossFit, we can call him nearly for the moment, Cullum O'Reilly, who is the owner of CrossFit Ireland. Thanks, Cullum, for coming on.
You're more than welcome. I think godfather is a bit bit high praise, you know. I don't think I'm Marlon.
Yeah, maybe it's just because you've been in so long. But thanks for coming on. So Jack, I suppose a lot of people will have in the CrossFit community and the fitness community in Ireland will be aware of you. But for those who aren't, could you give us a little bit of background on yourself and how you would have got into coaching in general?
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to college. I was really, really studious of the Leaving Cert and, like, just really put the head down, hit the books really hard for my Leaving Cert, and then kind of got to college and went, oh, what do I do now? Dropped out of commerce, then went to do sports management, which I then subsequently failed. And then, just but while there, I met some guys. I got into jiu-jitsu and martial arts, and from that, that led me to CrossFit. Kind of knew about CrossFit for about a year before I started it. It didn't make a lick of sense to me. I went on to the site and I couldn't understand what hang power clean 777 meant or why the next day was a 5K run. It didn't make any sense to me. But then a friend started it at Christmas. I was doing a lot of my strength and conditioning for mixed martial arts with him. I started it then in April 15th. I came back from my holidays and noticed I wasn't as in shape as I was in college, and like just instantly fell in love with it. Day one, workout one, it was Cindy. I got 17 rounds, and you can't see the big air quotes there because I absolutely know my standards were horrendous. I knew you had to break parallel in a squat, so at least I did that. But I know my pull-ups by the end were jumping. If I broke 90 degrees, I counted it as a pull-up because I didn't know how to rest long enough, and I don't even think about the push-ups, but I picked myself up off the floor, so that was awesome. And within a couple of months, then I booked to go see Chris Kemp, who had a CrossFit gym in the UK. I can't even remember the name of his affiliate. We went over to see Carl Steadman, who was part of CrossFit Manchester at that stage, and then booked my level one because I was just so excited. And then my same friend who got me into CrossFit bet me an ice cream I wouldn't open up a CrossFit affiliate. And I did. And you know what? It was a damn tasty ice cream as well. So that got me into CrossFit. I really didn't have a clue what I was doing. And I'd probably say I just have a more advanced not clue of what I'm doing now. That was 10 years ago. I opened up. Day one, no one showed up. I just thought I'd just throw CrossFit above the door and some people would magically find this above a carpenter's warehouse in Tala. We were there for about 2 years, brought some business partners on, moved to Sandyford, which is where it sort of became full-time, and CrossFit really took off. That was December 2009, we signed the lease on that. We opened the doors January 2010. As we used to joke, three young lads not having a clue what they were doing, you know, giving it a go was our sort of internal message. Worked with them for a few years, then split with them, and then reopened the third iteration of CrossFit Ireland 2.5 years ago with Derek.
Nice. Yeah, so not like the caveat, I suppose, like, and I remember those days in Tala. They were brilliant days, but they were mad fun days.
Yeah.
So I suppose like that over the years you would have changed, I suppose, like you're saying there, the just a bit more of a clue of not having a clue really.
Yeah. An advanced version of not having a clue.
An advanced version of not having a clue. First, I suppose, like, do you have a favorite part of coaching? I know a lot of coaches will, especially in the CrossFit kind of scene, will have an orientation towards fantastic member achievements and just really kind of small little moments that are very memorable. Have you a particular favorite part of it? Is it competitive oriented, or is it just like the regular person coming in that kind of gets you going in the coaching sense?
Is it a cop out to say I love it all? You know, it's no secret that I love the sport of CrossFit, and you know, anything Matt Fraser does, I watch intently, and ditto with the other top girls as well. But you know, that's the CrossFit side of things, and I think that's the super inspiring side. I wouldn't call it intimidating. But then you've got, like, you know, you can't, as a human, not be happy when a girl comes in and she literally, by her own admission, can't do a burpee. And then, like, a few years later, people are telling her she's an inspiration. Like, you can't help but feel happy that they let you be part of that journey, you know? I get given out to a lot, too, because I tend not to say I'm proud of things or I'm proud of myself for them. So, you know, that's where I allow myself to feel that bit of pride. I suppose my favorite part of you, to put it down, is when I'm not coaching, to be honest, and I just look around my gym and I see coaches I've helped develop and members hanging around doing some bonus extra work, or just hanging around laughing on the couch or cheering on the next class. And there's just a vibe, and there's a space for people. I think that's probably the thing that's missing. And I know people always say about community, but that's when it's like, yeah, this is awesome, and I'm part of that, and I have to remind myself to stay present and remember that this is something brilliant that people are involved in, and I'm helping fueling that, and that's what helps motivate me during the down hours to keep building the business side to support that. Nice. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I would agree. I think that I have the same in Galway. You can see those people that are doing either extra work or cheering on the next class. It's a different ball game than I suppose we would have been used to anyways in a regular gym back in the day and stuff. It's a different kind of gravy altogether. It's really, really nice. So moving on a little bit now, like that, like you would have you've been in business for a good few years now, and I think in general the challenge will always be as a business continues and your experience with it continues, it changes on a very regular basis, but also stays the same business principles, same coaching principles quite regularly apply. Do you have any particular lessons as a business or affiliate owner for either future affiliate owners or CrossFit affiliate owners or gym owners in general that you have learned either the hard way or the easy way from the last kind of 10 years or so?
Yeah, plenty have learned the hard way. I'm sure there's a good few have learned the easy way. But, just from a business point of view, the reason why it didn't work out, my big business partner, so you can dig into all the reasons. But at the start, we said, right, we're three lads having a go. And what we never did was establish roles and routines, you know, so that, like, okay, you are in charge of finance, and you're in charge of sales, and you're in charge of programming, people in charge of facilities, and where the line gets drawn. So that was kind of a lesson, you know, we learned. And then when I sat down with Derek to sort of form the business that supports CrossFit on and now, it was very much these are the rules and roles and tasks. This is the company structure, and that's tricky because, like, as athletes, we always bias towards what we like. You know, if we're not good at burpees, we'll tend to do our squat days. You know, and if we're not strong, we won't show up on deadlift days. But, like, if we're a gymnastics badass, we'll show up on rope climb days. And that's the same. That's the same as coaches. We will coach happily the snatch all day, but when toes to bar or double unders come up, we're like, just do them. Do them, it's fine. Or do leg raises. As a business owner, you've got to sit down. You've got to proceduralize things, not to the point of being impersonal, but definitely so you can make sure everyone's getting the same feel-good feeling. And that's tricky, and that constantly requires going back and saying, what are my core values? What's my mission? And making the business an extension of that. So, you know, myself and Derek have talked quite a bit as well, and it's very much down to, well, what is our mission? What do we want to deliver to people? What do we want this gym to be? And codifying that is tricky. It takes a lot of time, and you don't get it right the first time. You write it down, and you're like, okay, well, we don't like or we don't agree on this word. What do you mean by inspire? What do you mean by care? What do you mean by fitness, for Christ's sake? You know, how are you defining fitness? Are you defining it as the 10 skills and how Glassman originally wrote it, or are you defining it as something else, as pure weight loss or fat loss or before and after photos? Mm-hmm. So knowing your core values helps a lot, because there's always that tendency, and I'm not immune to it. You pop on, you see the affiliate around the corner is offering this deal, and, you know, this gym in the States, like, Ben Bergeron is doing this, so maybe I should do this. But, you know, Invictus is doing that. They're both successful gyms, and then you've got other gyms that, you know, aren't as comparatively as successful, but, you know, profitability-wise and sustainability-wise, they're really successful, but you're just not on the radar. And you're like, oh, well, I can do that. And, you know, you always want to go, well, how do I get 10 more members in, because that's going to fix everything. I'm sort of just rambling out if they come to me now, so interrupt me if it's not where you want to go, but definitely knowing the structures, knowing the policy, knowing what you want out of your business. Like, do you want a gym that has aspirations of regionals, or do you want a gym that is for people who, you know, are older, injured? Do you want a gym that supports your local GAA or rugby club, and it's primarily strength and conditioning? You know, knowing these things and not chasing everything, because it's too easy to chase everything.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think I agree. I think that's an interesting kind of point. I do think there is a lot more, I suppose, like with that, the diversity that even non-affiliated gyms or affiliated with CrossFit gyms have blossomed so aggressively in the last few years, and even dealing with some high-level different teams, high-level individuals, they make that choice themselves, but also then there's so many others that would make the choice of like, okay, well, this is just a community-oriented facility, and a community-oriented or a local type of oriented community. So that's an interesting kind of point. But the next thing, I suppose, then from there, on the coaching kind of sense, are there any particular areas you think that we are lacking, or that we're actually really, really progressive? Or is there one or two areas that you kind of spotted in the last while that were like, maybe kind of we could do a little bit more on that?
Absolutely. And I can only really speak for myself and what I want to do. There's a huge emphasis placed on, so the easiest one is there's a huge emphasis placed on strength. And I finally found a good message to tell people on this. So, little story, Matt Fraser in 2014, the year he came second to Rich Browning, and everyone was like, well, here's the future champ. He snatches 315 a few months after the games, 143 kilos, video on Facebook and YouTube from CrossFit HQ. This year's games, he snatches 291, so 23 pounds or 11 kilos less. Yeah. Okay? But he also wins by the largest winning margin in history. Okay, now it's a young sport, it's 11 years of competition. Yeah. The largest winning margin in history, the most singularly focused athlete we've ever had in the sport, snatch has gone down by 11 kilos in 3 years, yet he is way fitter. And you know, we fall in prey to it as well. That, like, okay, well, if we get everyone's squat up, we get everyone's power clean up, it's naturally going to make things better. But the squat might be up, but they can't hit 20 front squats after 50 burpees, or they can't power clean coming off the back of, you know, 20 calorie sprint on the assault bike. So definitely the emphasis on strength is the one skill to rule them all, you know? Yeah. And I get why we do it as well. As human beings, we always want to distill complex thing down to simple things, you know, and unfortunately nothing is simple, but we always distill it down to, it's easy to say, right, deadlift went from 200 kilos to 204. It went up, so therefore I'm stronger. It's harder to say I'm fitter, particularly based off the open, because there's judging issues, who's competing, who's not competing, the workouts, but, you know, unfortunately, fitness can't be defined down into one characteristic. There's 5 tests over the open, 6 or 7 at regionals, and 13 to 15 at the games to determine the fittest. You can't say one test makes you fitter. You know, if your fan time got slower by 20 seconds, but you got your handstand push-ups and your Amanda got better by 40, you'd have to say you're a fitter. But if you just look at your fan time, you're less fit. So, Definitely a de-emphasize on strength above all else has been a big lesson we've learned as well. And we've also noticed that our members have gotten stronger without having to go through squat cycle after squat cycle after squat cycle, which we've done and we've had great success with. Like, but we feel, I suppose for want of a better term, it's circular. It goes around to going, okay, well, what do people need? They need fitness more. And then if you're talking about what people need and where an opportunity is, there's still a de-emphasis placed on recovery. You know, and And it didn't de-emphasize place on the mental aspect of fitness. And I think there's a lot to it as well. I'm kind of fortunate to talk about mental health, so people are a little bit more willing to talk about sort of the mental aspect with me. Yeah. But we invest a lot of time in talking about mindset and how we approach things. And a friend of mine told me that, you know, he kind of got his gym and said, look, anytime there's a complaint in the gym, like deadlifts come up and someone goes, oh, God, I hate deadlifts. Or the next day it's running and someone goes, oh, I hate running. And the next day it's burpees. And the next day it's handstand pushups. He goes, you have 15 people. There's enough energy that gets dragged out of the gym. So he kind of essentially said, I don't care if I'm telling you it's 30 calories bike and 30 calories thrusters for 10 rounds a time. You need to go, right, how do I do that? Mm. You know, my answer was fucking slowly. Pardon my French. And so, you know, definitely mentally, how do we approach that thing as well? And it's something I learned from reading the Invictus Mindset ebook was definitely like, you know, how you rest. Do you rest with your hands on your knees? Or do you walk away from the bar? Do you stay at the bar? Do you cheer your fellow teammates on? Or do you get sucked into your own suffering? So there's a huge mental aspect to that as well. And I think maybe it's because I live in a city, I'm more used to seeing it, that we are tense, we are wound up. I'm a devil for constantly checking my phone every time my girlfriend leaves the room, or every time I have a 3 second, I'm walking over to Starbucks, I check my phone. You know, I'm walking back, I check my phone. That we're very wound up and we don't spend any time trying to purposely bring our heart rate back down, our sort of state of anxiety back down. And there's definitely an opportunity as CrossFit because, you know, our aim is first of all to get you to health and then onto fitness. And then onto wellness. You know, if you look again at the original thing, you know, most people are probably coming to us from a level of sickness where they're wound up or they're deeply unhappy with their self-image, and we've an opportunity to help them there. And sure, we can absolutely use burpees and thrusters as an avenue to get there, but I think talking about it directly about why, you know, it's important to have positive self-talk instead of saying, I failed that rep, we say, I missed that rep. Instead of saying, oh no, when a workout comes out that's tough, we go, okay, what do I need to do this, you know? So that's definitely something we're concentrating on, and we talk a lot and we try and blog about a lot on our gym, but it's definitely an opportunity for us to develop.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I totally agree. I think that's a really interesting element of it as well. But and looking at that, just going towards, not to go back too far, but you would have had a challenging enough time over the years, with that be with your own mental health or with confidence, etc. And I see even in the last, like in the recent past, a lot more orientation towards meditation and just that, like that self-evaluation. I think that can be really helpful once you work with people on that type of stuff. It can make huge inroads, never mind just on the fitness, but on your general ability to either maintain it or to actually try and increase the interest in getting fitter. So how have you found the journey over the last number of years to be at not necessarily a happier place, but maybe a more content place or a more interested place at least for yourself?
I would say happier place, you know. I credit to the people in my life who sort of helped me stay present. You know, I would have started meditating about 3 years ago and been fairly inconsistent, and I got, you know, and it's definitely a grounding force, and it's definitely the days where I skip it, I do notice it, you know. I think, you know, what got me into it was the Headspace app originally, and I think it's a very good app to start. You start off and you're trying to count to 10, and you realize that you get distracted after 2.
Yeah.
And you get distracted after 2 again. Again and again, and so you think you're a really bad meditator, and then eventually you realize that you're educated that no, every time you understand you've been distracted, bring yourself back. That's meditation. It's not this beautiful thing where you sit down and you go blank, your mind goes blank for 10 minutes. It's not like that. To draw the parallel to exercise, people sort of intuitively understand when I'm out for a run and I'm out of breath, I'm getting fitter. So when I'm meditating and I get distracted and bring myself back, that's developing that sort of mindfulness and ability to stay present. I definitely found the app 10% happier, and listening to Dan Harris's book 10% happier has helped hugely, because generally all the courses start with him interviewing from that sort of skeptic or cynical point of view, interviewing meditation or mindfulness practitioners and saying, okay, well, what about this? And they're saying, no, this is normal. So you're getting a little bit of education, and then you're having a guided tip. That helps quite a bit as well. It certainly helped me during this year's open. Like, I would have always been like, okay, well, only get out of breath in the last few minutes. And then it was a combination of that and hearing Mac Delage talk about it as well, that if you're in a workout and you're out of breath and you're going, perfect, I'm in the right range, versus you're in a workout and out of breath going, perfect, oh my God, I'm so unfit. The actual difference in your fitness helps. So I definitely recommend some sort of daily quiet time practice for people. Again, and I'm a devil for it. Like, I've 13 tabs open on my MacBook in front of me, and you know, and they're all like important stuff that I'll go through, but I can find myself sticking tabs and you know, being distracted like that as well. So definitely taking that little bit of quiet time out helps, because it builds up your resilience, because stress is unlikely to go away.
You know,
we're not going to reach that golden time where coaching is a piece of cake and we're fit as hell and we don't get out of breath anymore. And, you know, our relationships are perfect. They're all work.
Yeah.
But it's like, it takes time, and sort of taking me a long time to accept that there's always going to be challenges. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to reach this perfect point where everything goes on autopilot, yeah. You know? Because in that case, you take your foot off the ball, or foot off the ball, that doesn't even make sense. Take your eye off the ball. Foot off. Yeah, you take your eye off the ball, and then, but that's my experience with it. I can't say for definite, but it's definitely something I've found that I've recommended to people. And then just to keep me accountable, I always take a screenshot of it and post to my Insta stories. And luckily, I've had some people come back and saying, I like your dedication, and hopefully that inspires people, which then again goes back to the idea of my core values, to inspire people, their self-belief and stuff.
Nice, excellent. Yeah, no, I think you're right. Self-perpetuating feedback loop is a really, really helpful one. And I suppose looking just to a small little bit of a different direction then, and how that might relate and how valuable that might be for, I would see anyways in the last number of years, this increased, be it local participation in competitions or emphasis towards needing to compete in your own gym, or I suppose with a bigger influx of new people to the sports, we'd have a much bigger emphasis towards competitiveness now, and whether the likes of that kind of thing would be nearly as important, or is it more just that the enjoyment should be there before the competitiveness kicks in? Do you think, or have you found the change in emphasis towards competitiveness in the last number of years? Have you enjoyed it, or are you a bit nervous about it, or what do you think?
I suppose, what do you mean by competitiveness? Do you mean just more local competitions and people wanting to compete more, or?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. I suppose, like, even in, I'm sure in, I think it, back in the day, a little bit, like a few years back now, I know I would have experienced the same, but that mentality towards it being very fresh and new kind of sport, and not being very, very high, I suppose, prestige or monetary value and things like that. Looking at some competitions now that are extremely, not extremely high in money and stuff like that, but they have definitely changed emphasis towards a considerably more significant competitiveness, either aiming towards regionals or having this open program ready or whatever it is. What's your kind of opinion on that type of mentality? Do you think it's going to continue, and is it pretty healthy, or is it a bit kind of wobbly?
Okay, I think I get what you're getting at. I'll throw out some ideas. You can tell me if I'm wrong, and we can edit it afterwards. First of all, like, when people are competing in local competitions, you know, they're not CrossFit competitions for a start. They're competitive exercise. Now, CrossFit is protecting its brand name because it doesn't want CrossFit to become a, what's called a vulgar word, I think, you know, a word that's used in common language. It can't be trademarked. So you can't trademark exercise. Everyone exercises, but you can trademark CrossFit because it's a fanciful word. So the only CrossFit competitions are the open, regionals and games. Everything else is, you know, the team series presented by CrossFit. It's not a CrossFit competition, you know. So local competitions are exercise competitions, and I tell members when they're entering into them that you cannot dictate the outcome, okay? And you can't dictate the outcome in any sport. You know, I said you can only control your performance. There are so many variables at play. There's the limitations the organizer has by number of participants and equipment and rigs and whether they can do handstand pushes and all. So it may not be a quote-unquote balanced test. And we can argue whether the Open or the Games or Regionals was a perfect test as well. And that's a fair thing. But the only CrossFit thing is whatever Castro comes up with. So you tell people that. You know, then you've also got judges who are well-meaning, but maybe not, you know, I spend 3-4 hours a day looking at people move, so my brain is molded to look at that. You bring me into a basketball game, and I just see 10 guys chasing the ball around the court. Yeah. You know, it has no structure or reason to me. But you ask me to ref that, I can't ref it as well. And that's no knock to anyone who's judging. They're doing their best. But there's judging errors, and there's judging errors in every sport. Yeah. We've seen in the Rugby World Cup, Craig Joubert cost Scotland the chance at the final. Mm-hmm. You know? And the World Rugby came out and said he made an error. So he's a professional, trained, does this his whole life, and he makes mistakes. Someone at 5 o'clock on a Sunday after judging nonstop for the weekend is going to make a mistake. Yeah. I'll admit this, like, I was asked to judge. I'm in CrossFit 8 years at this stage, asked to judge in the Stoke 150 when it was in the basketball arena, and I miscounted someone's burpees. I got distracted. I ran onto the floor to help, and I, you know, it's burpees. It's not exactly a difficult moment to judge the standards of. But it's that, you know, and then there's, you can't dictate what other competitors do, you know? Yeah. I can get my athletes as fit as they can for the Open, but, you know, there can be people who've just gotten fitter. Yeah. So you can't dictate that. So I think if you're competing, you need to understand that competing is seeing the best you can do given all these circumstances and how well you deal with no rep call that should have been good. Or, you know, you just watch the next team, you're like, well, I got no rep for that, and they didn't. It's like, there's so much human factor in that. And that's not a knock on any competition or any person or anyone. And hold my hand up, when we did the Open here this year, we kind of got people to judge, but they still make mistakes. It's loud, it's the Open, it's their friend, you know, they think. So we kind of said, right, we'll come in a head judge, and we still make mistakes. We still make miscounts, you know. We think the bar has hit the chest of the bar, but it happens, you know. I think I've broken parallel on a squat. I haven't, or I have, you know. So mistakes happen, and understanding that and dealing with that is hugely important.
I think so. I agree. I think that's a great direction to go in. The ownership of your own fitness and your own ability to dictate your perception of how well you're doing in a competition, or what you're actually going into that for, into that competition for, just the enjoyment, or is it to actually learn and work in a very process-oriented basis. So the likes of the Open, if you're training for the Open, all these little competitions or smallish competitions can be fantastic for honing your craft and should be utilized in that kind of framework as much as possible, absolutely.
Yeah, and we judge our success in competition by, did you give your best effort? Did you hold, you know, how did you think and process, like, was your mental game as good as it could be, and did you support your teammates? Yeah. And so they're the only markers, like your attitude, your effort, your self-talk, and your teammanship. They're the only ones that are 100% within our control, you know? Yeah. Our body might be tired, and it's a match we hit normally in the gym, we go out there with nerves, boom, we throw it over our head, that can happen. So that's the only thing we do. We can't dictate that, you know, someone's going to come in and do anything else, you know? Yeah. And then I suppose, like, you know, I don't think it's as clear a definition as some people like to make between CrossFit the methodology and CrossFit the sport. I think it's more a continuum, yeah. You know, because it's not like you're a competitive athlete or you're someone who's looking to get fit. The way we view it, you know, we have the cross the pyramid, the hierarchy of fitness printed up and put in our gym. It's like at the bottom of that is health, you know, and you can't reach the competitive stage if you're not healthy, you know. If you're constantly suffering colds, you can't push it hard in Metcons. If you're constantly getting tweets in the shoulders, you can't develop your ring muscle ups. Yeah. So I don't think it's as clear a distinction. I like the idea that it's trained as a sport because sport then gives you a very good marker of progress, you know. Mm-hmm. Am I doing better in the repeat workout? Am I doing better overall, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, sport is fun. You know, sport gives people a little bit of reason. Like the whole thing behind sport is it's meant to be the one area of life where it is a complete meritocracy. It's down to your effort, your ability to climb high. Mm-hmm. Now, in reality, there's so much other factors, where you were born, your parents, what sport you were in earlier life, chemical enhancements, equipment access and all these things that are going to dictate how far you get in sport or how successful you are in an absolute sense. Mm-hmm. But sport is, you know, it's that great unscripted drama, you know. How exciting was watching the games this year, seeing Catherine, like, lose a podium spot and still have to fight back, seeing Sarah being good but making some costly errors. It was so live, but, like, on the strongman spear, Sarah got a no-rep call that, for my opinion, in the stands, wasn't a no-rep call, but that cost her 20 seconds or her third-place spot. You know, it came down to almost losing the games again. You know, I think taking second, you know, and losing again, taking second, a silver medal for third year in a row. It's hardly losing by anyone's effort. Yeah. But you know, that's what sport is meant to be. It's meant to inspire people towards a feat that they well thought they weren't capable of. Like, you're seeing literally the best athletes in the world at what we do hit smash PRs and be like, I didn't think I could do that, or, you know, go out there and clean a bar that's 153 kilos at the end of a whole bunch of bar muscle-ups is unreal.
Yeah. It's phenomenal.
So I wouldn't completely separate the idea of training and sport completely. I think when you train with the understanding that it is a sport itself, it helps your training, because that means you don't have to hit it hard every day. You're building towards something. And we love the Open because of that. You know, people getting the first toes to bar. You asked me about, like, favorite memories. A lot of them come from the Open when people, you know, that girl who never lifted before comes in and finally gets 43 kilos ground to overhead the first time, and boom, you know, that first chest to bar, that first muscle up. These are huge things, and if it wasn't for sport, we wouldn't be motivated to do them. Mm-hmm. But I also understand the idea of sport can intimidate a lot of people, because their experience of sport is primary school getting picked last for soccer, or, you know, not making the hurling team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's interesting that you were saying about that the emphasis towards that sporting mentality, and even like that, I think a lot of people will look at their gym, or they look at, I need to go in and get stuck in every single day at kind of close to 100%. But if that was any other sport, they would have steady down days and skill oriented days. And if it was GAA, they would go to the pitch and just kick the ball around. Like, they would just practice their soft skills. They would actually spend a bit of time on that. And they would have off seasons, they would do that. Whereas I think in this kind of a realm, sometimes it can be just about hitting it hard and going bananas. So it's interesting that's a nice kind of mentality to go towards. Do you have any particular advice for new coaches or the mature among us coaches, or even if anybody's a mature coach, I don't know. Do you have any kind of hints and tips for getting the best out of your athletes, or are we just going back on the mindset kind of element, like earlier on, or is there anything in your head?
Yeah, there is. Again, I won't claim to be an authority on this. Like, I steal liberally from people way smarter and way more successful than me, you know? Thatcher was working out your great, Ben Bergeron's, Max Allage, I think, is, I loved chatting with him this year as well. Like, you know, I was also very fortunate that, you know, I got to chat with him while he had Travis and Noah, so that was kind of at the high end. So I've been lucky enough that I've been involved with these people. In terms of new advice to coaches, first of all, I'll take a little step back. Actually, you sort of mentioned like going and hit it hard. Yeah. It's knowing what your goal is and remembering that, because it's easy to come in and go, right, plan. And we published one day, we said plan, but with a 6-minute cutoff. And everyone's like, I want to go rest. And we're like, okay, well, our aim today is to finish around the 5-minute mark, and we're giving you 6 with a bit of leeway. Yeah. You know, so that might mean scaling the rep to the weight. But no, it's fan. So we should have said we're doing thrusters and pull-ups, and our aim is to build up, you know, to do this. So it's knowing the aim of both the session, which is important for the coach. Is it a workout or is it designed for something? What do we want to get our athletes out of this? And then also knowing for your training. If your training is to maximize your fitness for the open, well then, coming in today and the workout is just about pull-ups, and you're okay at kipping but not so good at butterfly, you work on butterfly, even if it means a lower score today. You know, there's plenty of days where it's just like burpees and wall balls and it's hit it hard, so take the skill days matter. And then to bring it back to your question about a new coach, I think it comes down to having a genuine enthusiasm for wanting to see that person succeed. And I know that sounds as cliche as possible, but isn't our job as coaches to see potential in people, to see that nervous person come in and say, no, I absolutely believe you can pick up 100 kilos in a deadlift. I know based off the speed of your bar, you can do this. Or knowing that your goal primarily right now is fat loss. So you hitting extra squats is not as important as getting to bed a half an hour earlier.
Yeah.
That's gonna make more importance to you. So knowing that, and then making sure that's coming from a place of caring. And that's, it's so easy to forget. You're in a class, you see someone, they've taken their clips off the bar, which is a bugbear of mine, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and not remembering, not shouting, hey, clips on, you know?
Yeah.
Going over and putting on the clips for them and saying, hey, we do this because. So I guess the other advice is the more reasons you give people, the better.
Yeah.
Not, so today we're like rowing wall balls and power snatches, and we're looking for a sprint effort where that power snatch starts to feel really heavy, but we want to be able to do X amount in a row. You know, explaining that aim behind people, that we're looking to sprint and rest and sprint and rest, and this shouldn't be a slog or shouldn't break down at any stage,
yeah,
is important. Over building endurance, explaining that to people helps buy them into the vision. And then I suppose before that, you've got to know what their goal is and guide them from where they want to be towards where they're. So I guess caring is, yeah. Like, and that's tricky. Just because I say it doesn't mean I always knock it out the park with every athlete. I very much doubt I do, but that's kind of the goal I'm aspiring to.
Yeah, no, excellent. That's really, really good advice. And I suppose before we kind of finish up, the I like this kind of one because it gives me really good tools to learn and educate myself a lot, and to try and hopefully bring it to a lot of other people. Have you any particular favorites? Resources or books that you're kind of getting stuck into these days, or is there a particular coach or kind of a mentor, even if it's in business or in CrossFit or in strength and conditioning or in whatever it is, do you have any particular favorite resources at the moment that you're knocking about?
The big one that comes to mind, it's Matt Fitzgerald's How Bad Do You Want It? I've got the title of that right. It's probably just the best book I've ever read on the mental idea, the mental side of training. You know, it tells stories, and it's all based off endurance, but it kicks in so much. It talks about, you know, when the clock is beneficial to you, you know, what a good training volume is as well. Like, it's sports psychology, but it's such a good book. And, like, I read the book and then downloaded the audiobook and listened to that, and I'd almost read it again. It was that good.
Yeah.
So that was good. George Mumford's book on the mindful athlete is really good, and his meditations on 10% happier are out of this world. He was Michael Jordan's mindfulness coach. Bear in mind, Michael Jordan is like, you know, the Matt Frazier of basketball. So he's good as well. All of Ben Bergeron's podcasts are golden. I mean,
yeah,
whatever your measure of success as a CrossFit gym owner, if it's just lifestyle. You know, he runs a very, very successful gym that has all shapes and sizes in it, you know? Okay? He's also got his lifestyle well balanced in that he's home every day by 5 or 6. So he's reclaimed his life, and he also is, you know, coached to some of the best athletes in the world. So whatever your sort of goal is for being a coach or affiliate owner, he's probably ticked that box. So, you know, if we find ourselves listening to our podcast and getting uncomfortable because, you know, I was used to drink coffee on the gym floor, thinking, oh, it's okay because it's cold in Ireland. He doesn't get what it's like to be cold. Mm-hmm. Of course it does. So, you know, it's hard to ignore his wisdom.
Yeah,
so exactly. Maybe some resources, which I think are quite accessible, and you get quite a lot out of them very quickly.
Nice. Well, appreciate that, Colm. That's fantastic. So I suppose just a little bit of a quick one. I'm going to plug your blog, which is it Cheesecake and Barbells?
Yeah, that's kind of the intermittent personal blog. I mean, in terms of life goals, I'd love to be able to write down more thoughts on that, and you know, there's some entertaining stuff on that, and some sort of more serious stuff on that. That's my blog. And I blog on the CrossFit Ireland side as well.
Yeah,
you know, about fitness, ranging from getting into it, the nutrition side, recovery side, and then of course the performance side.
Nice. Well, that's exactly it, guys. I'm gonna throw the links up to those areas that you can read up a little bit more on Colm's thoughts. And it's been fantastic having you on, Colm. And congratulations on your 10-year affiliate anniversary, mate.
Here's to another 10 years.
Exactly.
Thank you.
No worries at all, dude. We'll see you soon, dude. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Colm.